It is July 22nd, 1998. This is Kelly Elaine Navies. I am sitting with Reverend Lewis Edward Grant in Little Mount Zion Baptist Church in Weaverville, North Carolina. How are you today, Reverend Grant?
Doing great, thank you. How are you?
I'm good.
Good.
This is our first interview. We're going to be discussing Stevens Lee experience that you had as a Stevens Lee alumnus. Before I move into the Stevens Lee questions, however, I want to ask you a few questions about your early life. Where were you born?
Born in Asheville, North Carolina, about 9 miles from Weaverville.
Where at in Asheville?
Right on Choctaw Street, the south side section, they call it.
The south side?
Mm-hmm.
What elementary school did you attend?
I attended Livingston Street School there.
Oh, I've heard of Livingston. Yeah. Okay, what year did you go to Livingston?
From 54 to about 60, no, about less than that. Anyway, did my elementary years there.
Was, 1 through 6?
Yeah.
How did you get to school?
Well, we either rode with Dad, he took us, or either we walked, and different times we'd have friends coming by and he'd pick us up and drop us off or something.
Driving?
Yeah.
Was it a long walk?
No, it wasn't that far, about 8 to 10 minutes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. What did you prefer, being picked up and driven or walking?
Picked up and driven.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Why?
Well, I just enjoy getting there and getting away from there.
Well, did you like going to Livingston?
Yeah, I like school, but I just didn't like to walk that much to carrying books and stuff. I'd rather just get me a ride and get there and get into class and get back home. Then I was always afraid of dogs, too, so you never knew where a dog was. And
really?
Yeah, it's a tradition in our family. You're scared of dogs, and my dad was scared of them, and so we were always glad to ride and didn't have to worry about a dog barking or chasing or even looking at us funny.
Did a lot of people have dogs then?
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
And some of them, you know, dogs used to just be sort of on their own. They wouldn't always bark, wouldn't always chained or something, so they could kind of hang loose. And some were good dogs, though, but some of them were just being afraid. You automatically started screaming at a dog before he even barked or looked at you. Go! Get away!
How many siblings did you have?
Three brothers and two sisters.
Where are you in that
line? I'm the fourth boy, fifth child.
Okay, so you're close to being the youngest.
I'm the third boy, fifth child.
Okay. Excuse me.
Yeah, there are four boys and two girls in our family. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're almost a baby?
Yeah, almost. Yeah. Missed out by 4 years.
Was that good or bad?
That was good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, what was it like to go to Livingston?
Livingston was an experience. Being your first school, you have a hate for leaving home. You know, you want to be at home with mom and daddy and playing and doing things, not having to go and sit in a classroom when somebody's trying to teach you something. Okay, how dumb you are, you know. Mm-hmm. So my first great teacher, Mrs. Cassie Evans, she really laid it on strong. I used to cry every time I'd go in the door. But Miss Cassie told Mom and Dad, I said, that's all right, just leave him with me. Leave him with me. I'll take care of him. She took care of me. She took me in that closet and wore me out.
Just for crying?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. She said, now, you're going to learn something, but you're not going to learn running that mouth and hollering and crying. And so your mom knows trusting you with me. So I'm going to go in here and straighten you out. Took me in the closet and tore me up.
My goodness. So how long did it take for that to happen before you stopped crying when you walked in class?
One day? Yeah. Those days where you don't tell a child 25 times, shut up and sit down, you know. They practice what they preached in those days. They say, sit down, you sit down. Mm-hmm. And when they say, shut up, you shut up.
So when you look back on that, you think that was a good thing for her?
Very good thing, yeah. She took control. And teachers need to be in control if they're going to do a class, you know. Students need to be sitting down, decent, in order, disciplined. And then they can get education, not be up crying and running and doing their own thing. So she stopped me. It was her classroom, and she laid it well.
So she was a pretty tough teacher.
She was tough. Good teacher, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So in general, would you say that you received a good education at Livingston?
Very good, because, you know, if you don't get your basics in your elementary school, well, nowadays it's Head Start and kindergarten, all that stuff, they teach you everything, but back in those days in 1954, you were going to school without all that kindergarten experience and you were taught by your parents pretty much as best you could be. And then when you got to school, you learned the basics. There were alphabets on the wall around the classroom, the capital A and a small a in printing, and then there was the cursive ones later on. But you learned your alphabets, and you learned your numbers, counting one from 1 to 10, and you learned that right there. And that first year, they started working on that, getting that into you. And that was one of my highlights. I never forgot those things. Mm-hmm. A is for apple. B is for balloon. C is for candy. D is for a dog, you know.
You did remember.
Yeah.
How large were the classes then?
Anywhere from 25, 30, something like that, 34.
Oh, maybe. Pretty large classes.
Yeah.
So where did you go to school after that, after Livingstone?
From there, we went to Hill Street School, and then back to Livingston.
Really? Why?
Overcrowding.
So you went back to Hill Street.
Yeah,
you went to Hill Street for 7th grade.
Right.
And back to Livingston for what, grade 8?
Well, no, what happened when we got out of 6th grade, we went to the 7th grade at Hill Street, and then they formed a 7th grade, built us, added 7th grade space at Livingston, and took us back the same year.
Really?
Yeah.
What about 8th grade?
So in 8th grade, we went to Hill Street.
Okay.
And then they made us go to Hill Street for the 9th grade. They changed the system there.
So you didn't go to high school in the 9th grade?
No. Mm. Well, they called it high school, but it was really high school at that particular place, and they said, you can call it, you know, high school in Stevens Lee, but you're not there yet. So we went 2 years to Hill Street. Then 10th, 11th, and 12th, we were going to Stevens Lee. And that was so disappointing. We were all looking forward to going to 9th grade, going to Stevens Lee, And they made us stay at Hill Street for the 9th grade. And by that time, then we got there and got disappointed there, too.
Oh, we're going to talk about that. So let me go back a little bit. I know you were really young, but you started, you said, in 1954, and that's when they had the landmark Brown versus Board of Education case to end legal segregation, supposedly. Mm-hmm. Right? Were you aware of that at all? I know you were in elementary.
No, we knew nothing about that then. Mm-hmm. If they talked about it, I wouldn't have remembered it.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember anyone at home talking about segregation or versus integration or anything like that?
Not really, because that was just an unnecessary word for us. My dad being a preacher and singer, and mom with him and playing and singing around, they were always in white churches, white houses, white people were always at our house and our church. And I mean, integration was nothing new to us. So, I mean, we could understand what people were talking about, races not getting along. It was just unheard of with us.
So you never had any problem going to white churches or anything like that?
No, it was never a problem. We were always there. And, always had white friends, and we stayed in white people's houses. We'd go out of town and stay with them. They'd come to our house and stay, and we just saw each other as human beings.
Do you think that was pretty typical for this area?
Yes and no, because some people did it, and back then it wasn't a big deal. Mm-hmm. It was just done because people got to know each other, and they loved each other, and they cared, and they did it. I call it integration forcation, because I said when it happened, that the schools were integrated, they were not integrated properly. Mm. It was just like, well, here's what we decided. We're gonna do it. Boom, there you go, take it. There was no love, no real learning how to get along. We were just thrown into something that was just, nobody was prepared for it. Mm-hmm. And actually at the time, because we'll probably get to that later, but we weren't even in integration, which I was glad that I was out of school when it happened the way it happened, because it was more rejection than exception, accepting people just really not ready for the way it was done.
So how did it feel? I mean, since you were so used to interacting with white families and white churches, how did it feel to be going to a segregated school?
We didn't know it was segregated at the time in such a way that says segregated. All we knew was that we were going to school, teachers cared, we getting education, we were disciplined. They beat our behinds. They tore us up good. They take a strap and wear you out. They whip you on the hand. If you got out of hand, they'd call the police to elementary school to come and talk to you. So you knew not to go too far because you'd be going to jail. I mean, it was just such a strict discipline on the school till you knew where to stop. And that all changed with integration. So we didn't know exactly how it was going to be, but I really appreciated the way it was, the discipline and the really caring teachers, because they would call your mom and daddy the drop of a hat. Mm-hmm. There were parent-teachers meetings that went on. Your child was discussed because the teacher knew the child well enough to say, this child sits here, this is what this child does. Mm-hmm. And it was that way with all the children. Every teacher knew everybody, and they would call you by name. And those old teachers in the last few years here, some of them just dying now, still know you. You know, they never forgot their students. Well, you go to some of these schools now and nobody knows anybody. You're either a number or a person that sat there and they, who are you? Did I teach you? You know, The other teachers knew you. It made sense.
I see. So what about in the outside world, like in the public arena, going into different places downtown, how did that feel prior to the end of segregation in Asheville?
Well, that was pretty good. I remember years ago at Sears Roebuck, they had a white water fountain and a black water fountain. Wow. The outside of the fountains was both white porcelain, but they had a sign saying white and colored. And so I walked over to the white one day just to see if the water was different and drank out of it. I didn't think about anybody doing anything or saying anything. I just went over and chased. I said, this water tastes the same way that does.
And
so.
Nothing happened,
you know. I mean, so many people have integrated things without doing it. I think probably somebody might have seen it and just let it go, you know. Mm-hmm. And if they didn't, whatever. But it was just interesting to find out they had this for no reason. They had white and colored bathrooms. And what was the difference, you know? Just people going in to relieve themselves and come back out, and yet you couldn't go do the same thing that everybody else does the same way in the same room. And there must have been a fear there of you might not want to go in this room because if this person's going there, you might catch something. Well, what was so strange, we were cooking in the houses, doing the floors, cleaning the places, and yet couldn't go in the same bathroom, couldn't drink the same water. Didn't make sense. Really, segregation really didn't make sense the way it was.
Right.
I think people saw that, and some are accepting it now, but it's still not as good as it should be because people are trying to do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you remember when the signs came down?
Not the year. I just remember when it happened that you could go in Sears and drink the water. We had a Bonpack Square. There was a monument up there that also had bathrooms, and black people had to go downstairs. I used to have to go to the bathroom and say, I'm not going down those steps. No, so I just wouldn't go to the bathroom. Wait till I got back home.
Mm-hmm.
But it was different. And you know, going in back doors didn't bother me as much because I was so young.
Mm-hmm.
And didn't know the value of a front door and the using of it. But at the same time, I got what I wanted from the back door.
Hmm.
You know, I could go to this part, get what I needed, and come out. So getting what you wanted was the key for us, and not just having the privilege to go in this door.
Hmm.
But when it did happen, I mean, it was, I think after it happened, people said, well, it's not such a big deal. So we go to the front door, you know, we're still getting the same thing we came in the back door and got. So what's the big deal, you know? But it was just people were holding something for a preference to say this is honorable and that's dishonorable, or this is for me and that's for you. It's like the joke Mom Mabel used to tell about running a red light. And they said, lady, why'd you run that red light? She said, well, I saw all y'all white folk going to this green one. I thought the red one was for us.
She used to say that?
Yeah.
That's so pretty funny. Well, so you said you guys were really looking forward to going to Stevens Lee in the ninth
grade,
and you
Didn't get a chance to. We had to stay where we were at Hill Street. And by the way, they ride a bicycle to Hill Street most of the time.
Oh, you rode the bike?
Yeah, we had bicycles, and we'd ride them over there and lock them to a post or something. And tie them to something. And people were pretty trustworthy then. If they took your bike, they might ride it and come back with it. But,
really?
Yeah.
So Hill Street was further away from home for you?
Yeah, it was good distance. I guess close to 2 miles maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that was a good change, but it was such an excitement getting to ride my bike that far away from home. And we had a chance to really ride. I mean, we could show out riding.
Yeah. Yeah.
Stretch out and fly.
That sounds fun.
Yeah.
So why were you looking so forward to going to Stevens Lee?
Well, there's always a kid's desire to go to a big something, you know. Mm-hmm. Stevens Lee was a big school. That was always the excitement of the Stevens Lee band. Mm-hmm. I think if anybody would tell you the first thing about Stevens Lee is the band. Not only the people getting along and the good closeness of the school, but the band was just something. I mean, when you talked about Stevens Lee band, you talked about the excitement of the year. They were, every time they were in the Christmas parade, they would end it. When Stevens Lee came through, that was the end of the parade. So they used to put them at the tail end, even put them behind Santa Claus.
Really?
Yeah, they had to, because Santa Claus got ignored or run over. When Stevens Lee would come through, everybody got out in the street marching with Stevens Lee. Let's go, here we go. So there was a lot of excitement. Mr. Lennon was the band instructor for many years at Stevens Lee. He could put a band together. Mm-hmm. Sounded so good, it was high class. And people that you knew were playing the music and marching and beating the drums, and it was just exciting all the way. And Stevens Lee had a good football team.
Wow.
I never played any sports, but it was always exciting when you listen to the radio and they had a ball game on, and this guy was running down the field from Stevens Lee. Yeah, and they'd say, "Oops, he just jumped over a man." God. They play football. Now they played football.
Really?
They would leap over a man and keep running, make a touchdown, and the city market of Asheville on Cox Avenue used to always give a ham. They'd always give that ham to that guy that got the most touchdowns, and that was always an exciting night to see who was gonna get the ham.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Was City Market black owned?
No, it was just a little white city market store right on Cox Avenue.
Hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, people used to go there and shop and buy their fresh meats and all.
Oh.
Yeah.
So what activities did you play or do in high school?
Nothing. Took physical ed.
You just went to class?
Yeah, went to class, wrote poetry while people were doing things out, sitting writing, reading my Bible. I carried my Bible to school all the time.
Mm-hmm. Did you know even then you would be a minister?
I always wanted to and felt like I would. Probably should have earlier, but I was more or less in preparation. And people call me preacher most of all my days in school.
Mm.
And that was my nickname.
Well, here's something I haven't heard too much about. What was the religious environment like at Stevens Lee?
Was it very good?
Yeah.
I'd say most of the people going to Stevens Lee, whatever lifestyle they had lived or chose to live, they would go to church.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They knew it was a thing that they were raised in. The parents sometimes maybe had quit going, but they would send the children. So it grew up in most of us to go to church. And we had devotions at school.
Mm, you did?
Yeah.
When did devotion take place?
That was the first thing you did in the morning when you got to school.
What did that consist of?
You come in and it was maybe sing a song and everybody bow their heads for prayer. And it was always that little devotional. It meant so much at school. Start your day off with prayer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I hadn't heard that.
Yeah, and some of the schools you sing something like "Jesus wants me for a sunbeam, to shine for Him each day, in every way try to please Him at home, at school, or play. A sunbeam, Jesus wants me for a sunbeam, a sunbeam. I'll be a sunbeam for Him."
And that was one of the songs.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Did you ever share any of your poetry?
Yeah, I sure did. I shared some. Used to read some in the class or either try to pass it in or get a grade on it where I failed or something else.
Did it work?
A little bit.
Yeah.
Depending on your teacher.
Who was your favorite teacher?
All of them except the ones that I didn't like.
Okay. Who didn't you like then?
The teachers who taught science and biology and algebra. Well, my algebra wasn't too bad, but science and biology, I couldn't take those classes.
Yeah, it would seem like you probably liked English a lot since you were writing poetry.
Yeah, I liked English. I didn't like all the conjugating of verbs and all that stuff. Sometimes it just kind of got out of hand with all that past participle and all those phrases they were using. What's that for? Get out of here. I don't need that, you know, and flunk it or something. But
I don't think anybody likes it.
So. Yeah.
Well, do you remember learning any type of black history in class or anything like that?
Yeah, that's what I got put out for.
Really? Tell me about that.
I had a teacher named Miss Harrison, bless her heart. She was teaching literature.
Lucy Harrison,
yeah.
I've heard a lot about her.
Oh, she was a teacher of teachers, and she was very strict. And she was teaching literature one day, and she got to a place in the book where people were doing some kind of a chant in slavery. And they were saying, "We are all black. We are all black." And she had the class chanting this. "Come on, class, say it. We are all black. We are all black." And I thought, "I'm not black." And, you know, back in those days, you were either colored or a Negro. You didn't say black. Black was a derogatory term. And didn't want anybody calling you black, even your own color. And for her to say that, "We are all black," just kind of upset me. And so I said, "I'm not going to say that." So I sat there and wouldn't say it. And she was walking around the class, getting everybody to chant, "We are all black. We are all black." And she says, "Grant." I said, "Yes, ma'am." "Why aren't you saying this?" I said, "Well, Miss Harrison, look at me. I'm not black." She said, "What do you mean?" I said, "I'm brown." She said, "Get out. Just get out of my class. Get out." I said, "But I am. Look at me. And I'm not black." I said, "That's brown." So she put me out. And I was so crazy. At the time, I mean, it upset me so bad that she put me out for that. I thought, gosh, I'm going to get in trouble. So when I did go out, I slammed that door. And where that came from, I don't know, because I was always very mannerable and nice, because I knew at home, if I wasn't, I was waiting on me a rear end soreness. So, but that day she put me out and told me, "Don't come back to you, bring your parents." I said, "Whoa, Lord." So I went and told my parents what happened. They met us at school the next day. And that opened a keg of worms, because I had some problems with grades in that class, in that room. Me and her had not gotten along all year long, and so she kind of flunked me on everything.
So what happened after the discussion, do you remember?
Yeah, after the discussion, I got tested, because the principals brought into it, mom and daddy, and the teacher, and they said, "Well, what's happening to these papers?" I said, "There's some right answers on here marked wrong." And she said, "He corrected his own paper, and he did it wrong." And they said, "Nobody would mark their own paper down." They said, "Something's not right here, so we're going to give him a test and let him see how he does on it." So I had, at that time, they was on the E system for failure. E's for F's, you know.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they used E at school, and I thought,
that's interesting.
Yeah, E should have been for excellent, but they had it for failure for us. But anyway, when they got through with the test, I made a good score on the test until it brought all my E's up to a C. And I passed the class with a C, because I was about to fail. And if I had flunked English that time, I'd have been messed up big time. So that really brought me out.
Well, what did your parents think about the "We Are All Black" incident? Did they think you were in the right or what? I'm curious.
Well, that just opened a keg of worms in such a way that it didn't even matter about that anymore. I don't even remember what happened about that. But the other thing was, you know.
Became a bigger issue,
yeah. And they just jumped on that and got that ended once and for all, and got me and the teacher on one accord where I could get some good grades and pass and get out of there.
So you ended up getting along with after all, maybe?
Yeah, sure did.
That's good. What do you think about that incident when you look back on it now, about your response to that class lesson?
"We Are Black."
Yeah.
I think it was a ploy that was used to sort of get people to start getting away from a term that had been given one way, but it was also a mistake that led us into another one, because the very words we had fought against and kicked somebody over, now we're accepting. I mean, black, you call somebody black, that was a fighting word. And then all of a sudden the teachers got us saying we're black, and it kept on. Next thing you know, they ended that word in, we're black people. And then it got confusing, because, you know, my birth certificate said I was a Negro. People called me colored. You didn't know who you were, because they tried to go, "We're Afro-American. You're from Africa." Then they called you nigger. So we were getting so many different names. It reminds me of a story once. A man asked Mama, when a white man said, "Sister Grant," he said, a white man, he says, "What do we call you?" He said, "I am so confused." He said, "I'll speak to some people of your race, and they throw back at me." He says, I ask them, "What do they want to be called?" I said, "I hear this one says, call me colored." This one says, I'm a Negro. This one says, I'm black. This one says, I'm African American. I'm Afro. He says, what do I call you? Mama says, just call me sister. Just yeah. Call me sister.
There you go. I know. I mean, really, it shouldn't be the first thing on people's minds anyway.
Yeah.
So, thank you. Mm-hmm. So, you were at Stevens Lee during the transition.
Yeah.
What was that like?
Well, it was kind of frightening, and it made you angry. Because we were in a school that was built with solid cement floors. That you could hear your echo in that building's sound structure. And they came up with this excuse about it was condemned because it was not in good shape. The school's about to fall in. And they sold that as a reason to tear it down. But they had Asheville High School, which is still standing, that a lot of people thought was about the same shape. Well, they would repair and fix, do whatever they needed to for it. And so they were going to use that school to integrate and put black people there. But they wouldn't put black people, or put white people in the black school. So everybody was thinking, how unfair that you'll tear down our black schools that are solid because you don't want your white people in our black neighborhood and you don't want white people in our black schools. Excuse me. And they said, well, we don't want to go to your white schools. We don't want to come to your white neighborhoods. But it all wound up, we had to be bused, or they. I didn't get in that, thank God. I mean, I got out just before all that stuff.
Right, so you were telling me, okay, so you went to Stevens Lee, the actual building, the Castle on the Hill.
The Castle on the Hill.
10th and 11th grade.
Right.
And then for, what, 12th grade?
For 12th grade,
you went to,
we had moved to Stevens, to a South French Broad School. They built this new school.
They built it just
they
to,
built it.
To house you guys.
Yeah.
That's really interesting.
And what they were going to do was build that school, and they were confused as to what they really wanted to do. They were battling whether they was going to really have integration and let it be that we mixed in the schools or whether it was going to be a new black school. So South French Broad was sort of a school built with a double reason. Hmm. And they were trying to see if integration was going to work somewhat. So they were on the eve of it. Just, it was just as I was coming out of a high school. And South French Broad was the school that we were able to graduate from, but they let us have the name Stevens Lee. We could call South French Broad our Stevens Lee and get our diplomas, Stevens Lee High School, and you could get your ring, either Stevens Lee or South French Broad, whichever you chose, because they were just totally confused on what they were really doing. Everybody wanted to call the new school Stevens Lee, but the school system wouldn't allow it. They said, no. I said, this is South French Broad. It's going to be a new school. We're going to use a new name. They said, this is not Stevens Lee. We're going to do away with Stevens Lee. It really made a lot of people upset.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why are you getting rid of our alma mater? And basically, it was because of integration.
Right. Yeah. Right. So what did it feel like going to this new building in your senior year?
You just went to get out of it. You wanted to go on and finish school and just get away as quick as you could, get through with it. I mean, for some reason, everybody had talked about Stevens Lee over the years. Some of your parents, different ones, had been there. And, Stevens Lee was just a home name for school. You got your top education for your area right out of your own school, neighborhood school. And this new school now, South French Broad, was even not even being integrated. It was just, who wants to go to South French Broad? Named for a street, you know. Need to check on the history of Stevens Lee, but I don't remember that right now. But just the street name of a school, that didn't mean anything to us.
And the building itself, was it as grand as Stevens Lee?
No, it was just a new building. It didn't have it was new, just a new building. That's all it was, a place to go to get your education and get out of there. But Stevens Lee had rooms that had walls in it, walls that had, well, made into rooms that said something, you know. There's a lot of education, a lot of history, a lot of blood, sweat, and tears, a lot of teachers who were old now, or who were getting old, who had given themselves to that school and really just did the best. And you knew everything in there was for a reason. Stevens Lee was and still remains in the hearts of a lot of people as one of the greatest things that ever happened in Nashville for black people. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's what you believe?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. It taught a lot of people how to become and not just, you know, seem like or bump along. We had teachers who I always remember Mr. Fair. He told us one time, he says, you know, they were using the term black pretty much then. He says, you know, black people make me sick. He said, black people get put in jail. Well, he didn't really say black, he said niggas. Mm-hmm. Niggas make me sick, so y'all go steal a piece of bologna and get put in jail for 20 years for stealing a piece of bologna. He said, if you're gonna steal something big. See, go to the bank and steal $1 million. See, you might get a year for that. So you get 20 years for a piece of bologna when you're hungry, and you go to the bank, steal $1 million, and get 1 year and come out. He said, do something big if you're going to do anything wrong. I said, that's stupid. Y'all make me sick. I said, how are people sitting in jail for just a piece of bologna? And he was, you know, basically right. He was teaching a simple logic that we hadn't even thought about. If you're going to do wrong, do big wrong, you know. You don't need piddling around and something you can buy for a nickel, a piece of bologna. You're going to go to the store and steal one slice of bologna, get put in jail for stealing. And spend the rest of your life almost in jail for it, because they would nail us around here. And they still do.
What do you mean?
Well, the system is designed that, not just say designed, but the system says we're going to get you. And it's a warning to blacks, don't do wrong. Because if you do, we're going to throw the book at you and then throw away the key and put you in jail. I preach in prisons a lot. And my thing is, guys, can't you wake up? You leave here, you go out, you get your freedom. A few days later, you're back in here. Why? I mean, don't you enjoy the responsibility you have in staying free instead of being a responsible prisoner? What's responsible about that? Get up at somebody's command. Do what somebody says. You're a slave, you know? And it just blows my mind that some of them just keep going back. They make a whole career out of prison where they could just stand up and be somebody. And the system is designed that first offense, you might get by. Mm-hmm. They might give you a little time. But if you become a habitual offender, in their book, whatever it is, it doesn't matter. If you go to court and get convicted 2 or 3 times, they consider you a habitual offender. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You can be in jail the rest of your life for stealing some food.
Right.
I mean, come on. It's too many places to eat.
Do you know a lot of people that you graduated with that are in prison now?
Not a lot. At least the ones I know around this area, not that many, but some are out of town that may be in prison.
So you say it's mostly younger guys?
No. Yeah, yeah.
That you see when you go.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, we'll see some older ones that wouldn't quit or did something crazy. Some of them got crazy and killed somebody or something. And driving drunk, drugs. And mostly, I think most of our people ain't now for either selling drugs or using drugs and just letting it take a toll on them.
That's an interesting question. Nowadays, you hear a lot about drugs in high schools. Did you know of anyone that was doing drugs while you were in high school?
I didn't really know of it. People say they were doing it, but I didn't really know of it. Didn't even, you know, marijuana has a terrible smell that you can tell. It's like grass burning.
Yeah.
In school back in those days, we didn't really know of it. If we did smell it, it was just so faint. And you'd wonder who it was and be trying to see. And people, if they were doing it, they were trying to hide. They didn't want nobody to know. They had respect for themselves.
What would happen if someone was caught with drugs, do you know?
Well, they'd get hauled off to jail. I mean, it was against the law big time back then, but they'd try to hide it or wouldn't let it be known. I mean, you could even come to school drunk in those days. If you did and caused trouble, they'd call the police on you.
Really?
Yeah.
What about other discipline problems? How did they handle that at Stevensley?
Very good, because they could whip you. And it,
really?
Yeah, they used to take you in the office and whip you good.
High school students.
Yeah. Hmm. They would talk to you. If that didn't work, they could whip you. Or if that didn't work, they'd put you out.
Hmm.
And nobody really wanted to be expelled from Stevens Lee. They just wanted to get there, and if nothing else, but to walk the halls. Mm-hmm. They wanted to be around. Back in those days, people were friendly, you know. Mm-hmm. There was always a bully in the crowd, but majority of people were pretty friendly. They got along. They were glad to get to school to see each other and just have a good time talking and learning and copying off each other's paper. It's getting a whole lot of things done, but it was, you know, you get out, you get your grades and get on out of there. And teachers were so good back then. They really were focused, and they would talk to the children. They talked to you in the class. They talked to you in the hall. And all the teachers just about knew everybody, or they knew the family. And they remind you, if they saw you doing something wrong, your daddy's not going to like that, and I'm going to tell him. Your mama's not going to like that. So it's going to break your heart, break your parents' heart when I tell them what I saw you doing. Don't tell it. Now, you tell it, I'll knock your head off, you know, nowadays. But those days, that was respect for people.
Did the teachers talk to you all about what was going on with the integration of the schools and the closing of Stevens Lee and that kind of thing? Their thoughts on that?
Not really. They didn't have much to say because it was so quickly done. I mean, all of a sudden it happened. And it was like the last year we knew we had just had a chance to choose what we wanted our diploma to say or our ring to say, and just before we graduated. So it was like, you have nothing to do but this, but just do what you want to do. And as far as deciding whether you want a South French Broad ring or a Stevens Lee ring, that's all you have to do with this.
Well, how was graduation? Where did you hold graduation that year?
I think we went to the auditorium, city auditorium. Normally, that's where we had the graduation exercises.
Is that where they always held them, or just that year?
I was trying to think if that's where we were. Or were we at a church? I don't even remember, come to think of it. All I know is I went and got that paper.
You don't remember your graduation ceremony?
Strolled across that stage, no.
Interesting.
I sure don't.
That's interesting.
I was so glad to finish school. And I always said, as soon as I get out of this school, I am through. I'm going to sleep in the mornings. I'm not getting up early to go anywhere else. I'm going to sleep. I'm going to get me a middle-of-the-day job or a night job.
Really? That's what you said?
That's right.
Well, did you head off for the Bible Institute after that?
Immediately.
You did, even though you said that. Was that your choice?
Well, somewhat. I had accepted the call to preach that same year, 66. And all my classmates said, we knew you were going to preach. We knew it. And I was scared. I should have been preaching maybe a year or two before that. But I was always shamed then. I could say, oh, I'm not going to do that. They're going to laugh at me. But they said, well, we knew you were going to preach all along. And then when I finished school, well, I told my dad during that year, I think around maybe April or so, he said, I knew you were going to preach. I knew it. He said, we'll set it up. So about, he said we set the date for July 10th, 1966, the second Sunday in July, for me to preach my first sermon. So that was giving me about 3 months or so in there to study and prepare and be mentored closely by my dad and so forth and get ready for the gospel ministry and so forth. It's quite an exciting time.
How was the first time for you?
Nervous, but prepared. Had a few notes jotted down. Preached my first sermon from Joel chapter 2, where the Lord said, I'll pour out my spirit on all flesh. And my subject was the, do you know him? You know the Lord is going to do this. And I preached on that. Talked about him. Old men were going to dream dreams. Young men will have visions. Sons and daughters would prophesy. Sort of felt like that was one thing that I was doing. Then the Lord called me to preach, to prophesy, to tell his story. And I preached about 5 minutes that first sermon. And of course, you know now they're longer than that.
About 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Something else. So how long were you away at school?
It took me 4 years to do a 3-year school.
Okay, okay. Did you live there or did you?
I commuted back and forth, yeah.
Because
it's just about 23 miles from Asheville. And the first year I went, I was told by people that knew the school or knew of it, they said, son, you got it made. You got it made. So you go into that school, the teachers are illiterate. The students are illiterate. Some of them have a third grade education. Some of the teachers didn't finish college. Some of them didn't go to high school. You got it made. You got a high school diploma. You know the Bible. You've been in church all your life. You're a Christian. Your daddy's a Christian and a preacher. And everybody knows your daddy. and you've been under the word of God all the time, you got it made. You're going to float through that school with A's all the time. They swole my head so big, I strolled in that school thinking I got it made. And for a whole year, I sit there with my mouth wide open, wondering what was going on. I was stunned. Those teachers talked some stuff. There was no illiteracy there.
Right.
Some of those students who had only gotten a third or fourth grade education from a classroom had gotten several years from the knee room with the Lord.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Ooh. So a whole year I failed.
Really?
Sitting there, yeah.
So it was challenging for
you. Oh, the Lord took that year to burst that balloon-sized head of mine. Because
mm-hmm.
I was just dumbfounded. I said, I thought I could float through this thing. I said, people fool me. That's why I quit listening to people. They'll lead you out there to the water and then throw you in it to drown you.
Yeah, people,
yeah.
So, I forgot the next question. I was going to ask you about that. Was this an integrated school?
Fruitland was integrated. It is a Southern Baptist school. They've always had black students who would come, but most of the black ministers or black people going to religious schools were encouraged to go to Shaw University, our black college in Raleigh. Our General Baptist State Convention owns that, and so we were encouraged to do that, and people were saying, that's where you need to go. But this school had the same literature, same education, same teaching, but it wasn't accredited at that time, and they were trying to get people to come there, and you know, you couldn't afford to go out of town, and you couldn't afford to pay the high cost of college education, but you could get the same thing here through this, though it would be an unaccredited school. And so a lot of people were doing that, and they said, you need to go to Shaw, you need to go to Shaw. We couldn't afford Shaw. Mm-hmm. And right here at home, I could go to school, get my education, and get to preaching, because God had called me, so that's what I did. And Fruitland is a tremendous school.
So what you're saying is when you went there, it was predominantly white.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But how many black students went there?
Probably about 5 or 7, maybe.
Out of?
300 or 400.
What about instructors?
Let's see, Reverend Stiles was one. Maybe you had about a couple of black instructors.
So what was that like for you? Was that after going to an all-black high school, was that a shock at all to you?
Not really, because like I said, we've been around white people all our lives, and in and out of their churches, and in and out of ours, and in the homes and so forth, and so it wasn't a big deal. It was just, you know, in one sense, it was a high honor. You got overpraised. Mm-hmm. Everybody knew my daddy, and that's Wesley's son, you know. And they'd go on and on about that and get me to sing, and we'd have prayer time and stuff. It was always just exciting things.
Mm-hmm.
Good days, and get to go and preach for some of the fellas. We had a church, somebody said, come preach for me sometime. And you go scared to death, but go preach.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know enough to preach yet, but it's a great, great time.
To run out of this side. I'm going to stop this now and then we'll turn the tape over.